Hello? Hello? Oh, Doc, did survie? I am not feeling well. I need some information about the coronavirus.
Oh, hello, Sylvie. Sorry to hear that. Come on in. I'm on the phone right now with my friends to create an action plan that covers the coronavirus. I'll put them on speakerphone.
Welcome, everyone, to Dr. Heather Uncensored. Today, I'm going to talk with some dear friends of mine about this whole thing about the coronavirus, what it is, what you can do, what you should be afraid of, what you shouldn't be afraid of. And so, Max, you introduced yourself as...
I was just joking.
Yeah, I know. He was just joking. But anyways...
I'm a videographer and an editor, and I do various jobs and work on television stuff.
Right.
And Elliot, this is Elliot, my partner, and he can tell you about himself.
I'm a retired flight attendant, and I work in design and real estate.
And they're both absolutely wonderful. I love you both so much. Before we start, I just want to say Max and I had a mutual friend, a very dear friend, who ended up dying of heart, but in fact he was HIV positive, and it could have been the drugs he was on. So that's our connection, and he's like a brother to me. So I just realized that this may be a trigger in terms of what not just gay men went through, what we all went through, because we had friends who were HIV positive who passed away. Our mutual friend, as I said, didn't per se die of HIV, but his partner did. And so I realized this morning that how much that brought up for me in terms of emotion. So I'm just kind of owning that as we go into this. But this is going to be, hopefully, Max and Elliot will be asking questions, and hopefully I'll be able to answer them. And I also want to go through all the different ways that we can, what we have in our body to prevent prevent getting sick. But I'm going to let you, Max, and Elliot just start asking questions, and we can go from there.
Okay. The first thing that I thought, and I don't know the answer to this question, and I'm not sure if anybody does, but we, with HIV, it kind of started in the West. The coronavirus had started in China, the East. It took a long time, from my point of view, for the HIV virus to be sort of identified and, strategy devised to deal with it. There was so much confusion. I lived in New York City at the time, and people were like, what is this? They called it the gay disease. They were like,
right.
Nobody was quite sure exactly what it was, what to do about it.
Right.
With the coronavirus, it seemed like, and of course that's, we live in the age of fake news, right? So you never know what to believe, but how long did the Chinese take once they had their first casualty to identify that it was the coronavirus and what that meant?
Right. And in fact, for this one, which is called COVID-19, because it's coronavirus disease, and it was discovered in 2019, as opposed to SARS and MERS, which it's very similar to. They actually, apparently, the doctor who started going, what is this, was put in jail at first. So what does this mean? I mean, there's so many questions. Where did this come from? It's possible it actually came from a lab. It's possible that, the fact is that coronaviruses have been around a long, long time, and they are often the cause of colds. So they're not something to be afraid of per se, but what's happening is that they're becoming much more virulent. This one is becoming much more virulent. And why is that? Well, nobody knows why, but there are certainly many precautions that you can take. But as we said, do these come from animals? Some people say originally it came from a bat, and then it transmitted to a civet cat, and then in Saudi Arabia to a camel. How do these things transpire? And we can talk about that. But for a major part of what's going on is that animals are losing their habitat, and that's, the deforestation problem. And so then those animals come on to farms and then yards, and those microbes that the animals might have, that they might be safe for them, they could be pathogenic, which means, you know, they sicken humans or, mm-hmm. you know, in these cases. Mm-hmm. So in fact, it's not like, it is a novel coronavirus, but it's not like the coronavirus is new. Coronavirus has been around probably thousands of years, but why is it that it's coming now? And is it dangerous? I mean, how dangerous is it? Someone just said this morning that someone died in Washington State. Well, there's so many things that we don't know. I mean, why are so many thousands of people dying from flu every year? And probably the majority of them have had the flu shot. And so there is so much that we don't know, but there's also so much that we do know that doesn't get talked about.
Yeah, I'm interested in the politics of pandemics, if you will. Like, you know, the different countries deal with these things in different ways. Some are very secretive. They want to protect their tourist industry. Others are very open. So, and it's hard to know who to believe. They said this originated in a market in a Chinese city of Wuhan. Who knows, right? Everything's up for grab. My first thought was, because we're trying to go vegan, is that in a vegan world, would this have happened? In other words, if people weren't eating meat and wild animals and domestic animals that are full of antibiotics, et cetera, would we have these viruses still? I don't know the answer.
Yeah, I think that's a great thought. And truthfully, because like, say, influenza, the one that's like a pandemic, or avian or swine, you know, influenza A, they are coming from animals, and they are coming from situations that are overcrowded. And in terms of the Wuhan, they're called wet markets, which means, you know, basically they're animals, so they have to drink in and then they pee and poop out. And so
there was also seafood in that market, correct?
I don't know.
I heard it was actually a seafood market, but they also sold these extra wild animals.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, in terms of, I've never heard of a fish. I mean, I know seals can get, I think, influenza B. There's four types of influenza viruses. And so it's the influenza A that is the pandemic. But in this terms of seasonal, you can get influenza B. But I don't think that anybody is cavorting with seals, so it's not really clear where that comes from, except human to human contact.
Well, Elliot used to be a flight attendant. Another one of my thoughts was, oh my God, the flight attendants are going to be really vulnerable.
Absolutely.
But a lot of flights to China have been canceled.
Right, I know. It's certainly affecting the economy. But that's true about, I know in my practice, and I had a lot of flight attendants in Vancouver, and, you know, they were always getting sick because the air is recycled and it's, you know, they're up there and it's very crowded, kind of, you know, isolated space for a lot of people, and those germs can pass around.
Well, everyone's really nervous about this. I know, I go to the gym and I think, oh my God, I'm touching this machine that 25 people have already touched this morning. Right. I'm a very nervous person, I have to say. They say, don't touch your face. Wash your hands a lot. Don't touch your face. I touch my face. I'm not, without exaggeration, I touch my face probably 25 times a minute. Because I'm a nervous person. I bite my fingernails. I'm I need one of those cones, you know, they put on dogs to keep me from touching my face.
Well, I know that, you know, you could take a bottle of essential oils around with you, or you can, I certainly don't promote Purell and those things because they can change the pH on your skin. And then anything that you touch that's, say, toxic, the barrier is broken.
Yeah, well, I don't, you know, years ago I read an article that said that people who use hand sanitizers actually get sick more often than people who just wash with soap and water.
Absolutely. Yeah, they're very toxic, extremely toxic. And I know friends went into a restaurant and did a, I don't know how they did it, but they did this kind of research study, and you could see what was, when the clerk was holding the, you know, it's got bisphenol A on it, those receipts, and it went right into their blood.
Yeah, so, you know, it raises the question for me, which is the really fundamental question here is, what should the average person do? I think there's two paths you can go down here. You can go down the path of trying to not get that virus,
yeah,
which is, you know, live in a bubble, put a mask on, wear gloves, all that. Or you can go down the other path of, no, I'll just strengthen my immune system so that when I get the virus, because it's inevitable, we're all going to get it,
yeah,
that I will be able to withstand it because my immune system is healthy.
Yeah, and that's what my practice has always been about. It's just building the host, you know, because, okay, so let's just talk about viruses for a second. A virus is a hijacker. It's someone that hijacks the host cell, which is us, our immune system, right? So it cannot replicate. It cannot go anywhere without us not consciously saying, you know, sure, have a good time on my expense, but basically, because we have a lowered immune system, it gets to walk right in. But if we have a good immune system, and there is a caveat here, but we'll go into that afterwards in terms of a cytokine storm. But a virus, there are so many different types of viruses, and something like this, yes, and sometimes with the pandemic, with the influenza, or, you know, or at the beginning with SARS or... they can be very, you know, deadly, sickening and deadly. But the truth is that we have so many things in terms of our immune systems. People think, oh, we just have, you know, one thing and we should get a flu shot because that's what's going to really help. And in fact, I'm not going to go into that right now because I have, you know, the first five episodes of this really talk about influenza. But any virus or any microbe, which is like a bacteria, fungi, or a virus, has to put up with our immune system, our innate immune system. And the innate immune system is just there. It has, you know, there's no specificity. It's just about keeping invaders out of the body. And it makes use of the complement system. It makes use of, you know, all the white blood cells, interferon, all those kind of things. So you've got that in. And then the physical barriers, you know, like just the fact that you have skin or enzymes in your mouth or, you know, like acids in your stomach, all these things. Anyway, so that innate immune system is huge. And then if it passes that and gets into the adaptive, which has two types, which is cell-mediated and humoral, and the humoral is the one that gives us the specificity in terms of the antibodies, but the cell mediated is so important because it has an elimination process. So I'm going to be probably talk about this a little bit, so if it's unclear right now what that means, but that is just so important. And then we have the microbiome, which is our gut. And, you know, everything from, as I was talking, the enzymes in our mouth and the acids in our stomachs and the microbes in our, good microbes in our gut, all those, they can destroy pathogens. And then you've got, I was saying, you know, the interferon, which was figured out in 1957. And there's an alpha and a beta. And that is also, it's the number one cytokine, and those go around and kill things. Then we have the HPA axis, which is really connecting our brain and our adrenals. So that's really important because there's just so many components of that that's keeping us healthy. So it's not like we're sitting here, you know,
defenseless.
And yeah, we have so many things. And in fact, all of these things are screening pathogens from getting into our bloodstream, right? So, and just going further into the innate immune system, the white blood cells, whether they're macrophages or neutrophils, I mean, the macrophages are tissues that are throughout your body, but they're also especially in your gut and lungs, and that's why it's so important. And coronavirus is giving you both upper respiratory symptoms and lower respiratory symptoms. And so upper would be like, you know, a cough or all the kind of cold kind of stuff. And then the lower is more like, can be pneumonia, it can be bronchitis, and it also over long term and scarring, it could be COPD, right? Which is emphysema and things like that. So then there's also neutrophils, and they're really abundant in our blood too. And they're recruited by activated macrophages. And these are things that will start destroying the microbes. And there's what they've discovered not too long ago called TLRs, or what is it, toll-like receptors. And they're on these cells. They're on the macrophages and the neutrophils. And they're like an alarm system. And they're trying to, they discriminate between the self and the non-self. So they're telling you, okay, so this is a bad guy coming in. And they're signaling the cytokines, like the interferons, and they're signaling all these things that are very toxic, and they're oxygen-derived compounds that will create like a respiratory burst, which means that the cells consume more oxygen temporarily, and then they're destroyed. So all of these things, you know, they bind to the cell surface, and they destroy the proteins, or they destroy the RNA of the virus. So that's huge. I mean, I'm saying all these things because I want people to understand what this actually means, that we're not defenseless. We have all these different things that we've learned about, and, you know, we just need to trust our innate system. Now, when something passes the innate system and it's actually something that might be making us sick, then what happens is there's just certain cells called the dendritic cells, and they pick up these antigens from the invading pathogens, and they carry them to, you know, whatever lymph system is nearby, and they activate the adaptive system, which is what I was talking about with the cell mediated and the humoral. So now we're finally into this stage. And this is a really important stage because this is being sick. Once the cell mediated is activated, that it will give you, say, a fever or a mucus or cough or a rash. These are the symptoms that we classify as being sick. So now we're sick, but the cell mediated has got all these white blood cells, just like the innate system. The white blood cells are engulfing the pathogen, or they're spraying them with chemicals like the nitric oxide. So you really don't want to suppress this stage. And this is something that's so important, because I want to tell you all this just in case you do get sick, how important it is to not suppress a fever. And finally, I think, you know, as naturopathic physicians, we've been saying this for so long, since, you know, that a fever is really important because the virus can handle a lower temperature, but once it gets to a higher temperature, it gets killed. So the fever is actually killing the virus. And
good to know. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I know. I want to just tell you all the stuff, Max, because I want you too, especially, to be really healthy. I don't want you to get sick. In that adaptive or acquired system, the second one, after the innate, after the pathogen has passed, and said, okay, this is a problem, we got to do something, the cell mediated always involves elimination. It's always detoxing all that stuff, because that's what it's happening, is that there's all these sort of toxic particles in your body, whether it's a virus or all the breakdown products of the virus. And so that's why the fever is trying to kill it, the rash is bringing it out, the mucus is surrounding it to get it out, and the cough, of course, again, is trying to get it out. So we definitely don't want to suppress that. If you get to like 104, okay, you can, or even 103, you can start doing cold compresses to bring it down. But you do not want to take anything like, what do you take? Like
ibuprofen,
Tylenol. Yeah, any of those. You don't want to. Don't do it. You know, in fact, in the early, you know, way back, like, well, last century, I guess, even two centuries ago, all the homeopaths said that, you know, they were doing really well against the allopaths for a lot of different reasons. But they said that if anybody came with them that had been taking aspirin or a fever-reducing substance, they'd often lose the case. And that's because the person has just lost the ability to fight. They've suppressed their, you know, the whole cell-mediated system. And the other part of the adaptive, there's the cell mediated as part of it, and then there's the humoral. So the cell mediated starts right away, and the humoral is the antibodies. And that's when when they make vaccines, that's the system that they are activating in terms of the antibodies to a specific substance. But the problem is, and that's the problem with vaccines, is that there's no cell mediated. So it means that there's no way, except the innate is going to help some, but it doesn't have that real charge of the cell mediated to get the toxins out. And that's why so many children are harmed by and adults, unfortunately, by some of these vaccines. And that's exactly what the problem is. I just wanted to identify that there. Of course, with the coronavirus, there isn't even going to be one for 12 to 18 months. So even if that's a possibility for you, it's not possible.
So from that point of view, does it mean that we shouldn't even really worry about getting this virus? Because I read in a couple of places online that we're going to get it. Everyone's going to get it. So don't think you're not. It's going to go everywhere. It's just a matter just a matter of, you know, people who are stronger won't be terribly affected by it. And people who are vulnerable may get really sick and die.
Right. As is the case with the flu every year. And so with the coronavirus, what they're seeing is what's important to understand is different organs in the system so that we can boost them up. Okay, so it's upper respiratory, but it's also lower respiratory. So you're dealing with the lungs in totality. And it's also giving people a GI infection. And that's why it's so important for the GI tract to be taken care of. And the GI tract, as I think many people understand this now, there's good bacteria and there's bad bacteria. So the microbiome is really showing you, do you have a strong terrain in your system? That's what they call it, terrain, right? So that's so important to immediately say, okay, I'm not sick now. So what I need to do is clear out all the crap that I'm eating, you know, if I'm eating sugar, anything that decreases the immune system response, but also to make sure that you've got things like fermented foods, you know, sauerkraut or tempeh or miso or fermented vegetables like kimchi. That's why, because it allows that terrain to be strong and really not allow the virus in, even though you might, you know, you might say have it come in through your mouth or through your nose. And the other thing about the coronavirus, which is I found really interesting, because, you know, I've just this book of mine on flu is coming out in a few months, and I didn't know, is that they actually have found a Chinese plant. It's also, it has the same name as Sambucus formosana nacai, and Sambucus is elderberry, which we use to fight against flu, and has really good studies. And this seems to have very good studies as well, and it seems to say that it's the caffeic acid component of it. And what happens is that it significantly inhibits the replication of the virus, and it blocks the attachment. And this caffeic acid is found in turmeric, in basil, in oregano, in sage, in cabbage, in apples, in strawberries, in cauliflower, in mushrooms, olive oil, and more. So those are kind of the foods that you can immediately start having, and those are all the foods that, all of them are my favorite foods, so I'm happy about that. But that was something that I just learned the other day, that there is actually this plant that has shown strong activation against the coronavirus.
You know, what's interesting is that when I was a child growing up in Canada, and my mother, and she would spot. I'm sorry.
No, I just didn't hear you for there. They cut out for a second.
Yeah.
Okay.
And my mom would be driving, and she would spot these huge bushes of wild elderberries.
Oh,
and
wow!
She would slam on the brakes, and she'd say, "Elderberries, everybody out!" And we would all go, and we would break all these elderberries off of these huge bushes growing wild by the road. But, you know, throw them in the trunk of the car,
and
my mother would make elderberry pie, elderberry this, elderberry that.
Fantastic. Oh, that's so cool. Mm-hmm. And how did she know about that, do you think?
She grew up on a farm. I imagine it was just something that people who lived on farms in Canada at that time or anywhere where elderberry, they just knew.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's really great. Anytime you talk about your mom, she just sounds so wonderful.
Yeah, she was.
Yeah. So,
Did I interrupt your train of thought here? Go ahead.
No. Go ahead.
Well, my question's about diet, because I said earlier we're trying to go, we're sort of pescatarian now, but we don't eat meat and chicken and poultry anymore, just seafood. But we're trying to go more in the vegan direction. So, is a vegan diet going to help you detox and be more and generally immune?
I think that's true. You know, I had Graves' disease. So someone who's had an immune system, autoimmune disease, I found that I really needed some kind of meat. And that may just be the influence of Avi, but it just made life easier. And I actually eat grass-fed organic beef, which is a little strange, perhaps. But I need a lot of protein. You need a lot of protein when you have an autoimmune disease because there's so many proteins involved in the immune system. But I think that a vegan diet is great. I think it's so clean, and the only way that, as I said, the only thing that I will eat these days is grass-fed organic beef, because I know where the cows come from and I know that they're treated humanely. But yes, I think it's a great idea to do that. Neither of you have had a chronic illness, and it is very clean in terms of just making sure, you just have to make sure that it's organic, because you can get a lot of vegetables that are just, full of pesticides, fruits and vegetables, and that is what you absolutely want to stay away from. My whole thing is just really organic this, organic that, and detoxing every day. So if you're concerned about being really healthy, I really suggest to people, one, they get an alkaline water machine, and we can go through that if you have any questions. Two is an infrared sauna. Three is, if you can't, make sure you're exercising every day. If you can't, get a trampoline and get the lymphs going. Living in Los Angeles, I think those three things are absolutely essential. And then, of course, you want to just make sure that you're hydrated, so that you're anything that's in your body that is able to just keep coming out. And the other things that you should be doing is taking high doses of vitamin C and making sure that it's liposomal, because liposomal seems to be as effective as vitamin C in terms of, being IV, intravenous.
Can you tell me how that's spelled? I've never heard that word.
Liposomal, LipoSomal.
And that's a form of vitamin C?
Yeah. And it allows, it's liposomal means that it's lipophilic. It's able to go through the cells much more quickly, because the cells are part fat. So you need, it's just going to be into your cells, and then it allows that cell to detox. It allows all the things in your cell to work really well. And that's why, I was surprised even that I came across so many different researchers saying that vitamin C eradicates all viruses. So that's what I don't understand. Why, even if the government is not into naturopathic or natural medicine, why can't they just say, vitamin C is so common, for everyone these days, just tell people to eat well, the vitamin C. And the other thing is really essential is vitamin D. And if you have low vitamin D, one of the things that can happen, besides the fact that, you need vitamin D for so many different reasons, is that it can bring on, it seems to be, the cause of a cytokine storm, which is what happened in 1918. The cytokines are what I was talking about, interferon. And that's in...
How do you spell it?
CYTOKINE.
Uh-huh.
And basically what happens is the cytokine storm is it's too much. You know, it's just revving. Your immune system is just way overboard. And why is that? And so we go through that in our book, Dr. Alec Peckler and I. But I think from what I'm reading and what makes sense sort of on a gut level after doing this for a long time is that if the vitamin D is low, it's kind of like the body keeps kind of, you know, it's kind of clawing at your system. Get it going. And so then it's not allowing the vitamin D, because there's no vitamin D, it's too low, to actually go off and do what it needs to do. But it's forcing these cytokines, the interferon, to over-rev. And that caused a lot of deaths in 1918. They didn't understand why all these healthy young soldiers and these healthy young men were actually not only getting sick, but dying. And I think that that's probably what it was.
Well, don't we get enough sunshine in Southern California that we get vitamin D from?
Well, funny thing is, you know, I was sort of shocked when I would take people's the status, you know, check their status of vitamin D, and so many people who are from Los Angeles were really low. And then it becomes apparent that they're very low in other minerals. So you need, say, magnesium to allow the vitamin D from the sun in. And
that was my question. That was my question. Don't you need to take magnesium with vitamin D?
Yeah, it's a really good idea. And for so many different reasons. Especially, I mean, now, you know, people are so anxious. Magnesium is really the most abundant mineral in the body. And it really can help people calm down. And I think, you know, that's why I want to get this information out there. Because, you know, I don't specialize in this stuff. I mean, I did years ago in my clinic in Vancouver, but I really moved into, PTSD trauma, emotional trauma. That's trauma-induced illnesses. That's my forte. But you need to know all this stuff because you need to balance the biochemistry before you allow, you know, before the story can come out in that. But, okay, so what else can you do? Vitamin C, vitamin D, make sure that your sleep is, you know, everybody knows that. Sleep.
Lots of sleep.
Mm-hmm. Lots of sleep.
Reduce stress.
Not too much sleep. reduce stress any way you possibly can. Healthy diet.
When I lived in New York, we're talking about HIV epidemic earlier.
Yeah.
When I lived in New York and HIV hit the scene, I went to, I started with this doctor who I guess was a naturopath. She didn't treat anything with drugs. It was almost everything she treated was diet. And she had cured herself of rheumatoid arthritis. She told me, she said, the two most immunosuppressive foods are sugar and dairy.
Exactly.
And when you're sick, you should avoid sugar and dairy.
Absolutely. Thanks for bringing that up, Max. Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think I don't have sugar and dairy even when I'm not sick. I never have it, either of those. If you're going to have dairy, then make sure it's fermented. Or if you're going to get milk, if you're really, you know, some people really love milk, then you should really get raw milk. Just know what the dairy, you know, where, you know, the status of the dairy. I mean, as long as it's a clean dairy, you shouldn't have any problem. But raw milk has all the enzymes. It's so important to get enzymes, you know, and that's what you get from raw food.
We don't use much dairy because we use soy milk and almond milk, and now we're using oat milk.
Yeah, I don't use soy milk. Soy really affects the thyroid gland, and it's usually, there's very few. Soy is contaminated, basically, with, you know, GMOs and...
Even the organic?
Well, it's just not good for your thyroid. You know, I had Graves, and I really just tell people, forget the soy. And I, you know, sometimes if I want a little rush, I'll drink soy milk, and it's like, it really is like a drug to me. So I haven't really pursued that to understand it in, you know, really...
Well, we read an article recently that said that oat milk is the best in terms of...
Yeah, nutrition. Oat milk... Well, oats have beta-glycans in them, so they really boost the immune system. So that's a good idea, as long as, you know, grains aren't a problem for you. The other thing that I would really suggest that you do is get phytoplankton and make sure you have zinc and selenium. But phytoplankton, I get mine from... Sackville, New Brunswick, where I used to live a long time ago, and they actually import it from Spain, and it's grown in the ocean, but it's it's grown in protected water. So mm-hmm. it's really, really clean. And that stuff, I just put it in some grapefruit juice, you know, and you can really kind of feel that it's really giving you, it's giving you probiotics. It's giving you all the algae, which is just so important for your system. And the other part, I just want to make sure that I get all this stuff in, is you need to be detoxing daily. Like I said, you know, with the infrared sauna, making sure you have alkaline water, you're taking some kind of probiotics, you're doing some kind of seaweed like phytoplankton. And the other things that you can do is like get a humidifier, and that will decrease a virus's survival rate. And the other thing is to make sure that you irrigate your nose almost every day. There's certain,
you get a humidifier or a dehumidifier?
No, a humidifier.
A humidifier.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I would have thought it was the reverse. Like they
more I know.
Allow them.
Yeah. To. I mean, I'd like, yeah. But I think that apparently humidifier is really important. I mean, you know, it's always about balance.
Mm-hmm.
Depends what your house is. It depends if you're in Vancouver or you're in Southern California. It's very different. Yeah.
Well, we're in the desert out here, you know, in.
You could probably use a humidifier. Mm-hmm. Pretty dry. Depends. I mean, it also depends on your health and what feels good, but you can try that. But the other thing is really to irrigate your nose. And you can get something like, you can do a neti pot, which is sometimes not easy, but you can also get something called, any nasal spray like X-Clear is very natural. It has xylitol, which is healthy, and grapeseed in it, grapeseed extract rather. And you can do that as much as you want.
Mm-hmm.
And that will
like the same as a nebulizer.
No, nebulizer. Well, nebulizer. When I think of a nebulizer, something's going in. This is just a spray.
Uh huh. The neti pot.
The neti pot. You can use a neti pot. You can.
Yeah. Or like that ocean spray that you just irrigate your nasal passages with. That works.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't know what's in that. Check that. You need to make sure that the ingredients aren't, you know, you don't want to put, it's really important that you don't put any more toxins in your body. You know, that's what happens with a lot of drugs. People say, oh, you're going to take this or that. But the problem is that, like even, you know, it was interesting. Someone was talking about Tamiflu as if it was some kind of drug. You know, Tamiflu is from sweet gum. It originates from a plant. But the problem is that there's all these fillers and additives to it. So I would never take that because I know elderberry is going to have, or lamation, it's going to have a very similar effect to as an antiviral. And it's the same thing with nasal sprays. You've got to really read ingredients. Anything you put in your body, whether it's cosmetics, food, house cleaners, drinks, medications, like, you know, if we're going to call this a medication, you just have to make sure that they're as clean as possible, because these days it's as important to get the proper nutrients as it is to detoxify. Because our, you know, especially living in Southern California, I don't know, I know it's supposed to be quite toxic, unfortunately, out your way too, but, you know, we're living in very toxic air.
You mentioned lomatium. Now, I've heard that you talk about this before on your first, in the series of these podcasts, you talk about lomatium.
Uh-huh.
And you can tell the story again if you want to here, but my question about lomatium, or is it only taken once you're sick?
Okay, I think that there seems to be, I keep getting this message that the internet is unstable. It must be here because we don't have great internet. So sorry, folks. So you'll have to repeat yourself, Max.
Okay. I've heard you talk about lomatium before, and then also in your first podcast of the series. Lomatium has an interesting history, and if you want to tell that story again, that would be cool. But my question about lomatium is, you know, when at the end of your story, if you can say, is lomatium the sort of thing that you take, like vitamin C, you take it regularly, or do you only take it when you're sick?
I only take it when I feel sick. And that's economy as well as why take something when my food and my lifestyle is working. And I like to save things. I mean, if I were to get really sick with, say, bacteria and pneumonia, I might even take an antibiotic. which I never do. But you know what I mean? Like, but you want to save those things. You don't want to take them for, that's the problem right now, is everybody takes them, takes these things when they don't need them. And your body with the innate and the adaptive will, you know, will work wonders for you. But it's a great question. And I would say I do not, and I do not recommend you do it unless you're starting to feel like you're getting sick. Mm. Okay, so the story is this. And I learned this from at school, actually, at Bastyr. And he actually used to come and visit Max Barlow. Max Barlow knew the medical doctor who was the tribal doctor for the, as they call them, the Washoe Indians, and you know, as Canadians we call First Nations, but and he was there in 1918-1919 with the so-called Spanish flu, and he said, well, nobody's dying, you know, I mean, they could get sick, but they weren't dying. And they said, oh, we have this root, and this root, lumation root, grows between rocks, apparently. And so he was able to, with his friend Max Barlow, who was the father of Jane Barlow, who runs Barlow Herbal Specialties, I believe it's called, and she was my guest on episode 2. He was able to start making this for people as a tincture, and that's where it came to white people, really, was from the Washoes. And it's a wonderful, wonderful plant. It has so many different abilities in terms of, you know, it is really anti-influenza. I mean, it really does. It is able to slow and stop the influenza virus, and those people were sick, but they did not die.
All the white people were getting sick and dying.
Exactly. Well, there were 50 million apparently around the world. Mm-hmm. It died 100 years ago. That's why, you know, that's why I wrote the book. I didn't even know why I was writing that book on influenza. It just sort of happened, and I just started writing. Oh, I remember now. It was because I was writing, you know, the second novel, Sting of Absence, and as I was doing the research on yellow fever, because it takes place in New Orleans, they were talking about that there was going to be another epidemic, and it was going to be the flu. And so, anyways, talking to Jane, she just goes on, you know, on that episode too, she'll tell you all the things that lumation can do. And, you know, that's why, okay, so one thing I haven't said is that what you really want to be careful about is not getting pneumonia from, say, the coronavirus, whether it's a viral, or then if it gets, it could allow the terrain to be out so much that a bacteria could come in. That's really what you don't want. And Jane was just talking about how lumation is just so good at helping pneumonia.
Hmm. Great. So I'm going to order some and keep it handy in case I get the flu.
Exactly. Go to Jane's Barlow Herbal Specialties, and she'll be happy to send you. She has a great little spray too for the back of your mouth, you know, if you get a sore throat. It's got lumation in it, but it's also got honey and some other things in it. Yeah, she's really great. She really knows her stuff. So I really like recommending her, because she's actually making this stuff, and she has the, you know, it's a wonderful history with her dad. I think she's one of 14 kids, and they were always treated naturally up in Utah. So any other questions, or do we need to know more?
What do you say, Elliot?
Did we want to discuss indications and
in terms of
incubation time and
sure,
for coronavirus?
Yeah, well, coronavirus, that's one of the problems, is because people don't realize that they are sick, and they've got enough energy to, you know, to get out there and be out in the world, because it's just less pathogenic. It's just not going to make you feel crappy. Whereas if you're harboring it, then you might be giving it to other people. But it's the same thing as any kind of viral situation. And, you know, you'll get a fever. Eventually you'll get a fever and a cough and feel tired, and your muscles will ache, and you'll have shortness of breath. But it is something that takes time. It, you know, like with flu, it's, you know, a couple days, and then you'll see symptoms after, you know, contracting the microbe. But with this, it's just less infectivity, and which is also good. I mean, it only apparently, you know, like measles, if one person gets measles, it could be like 16 people could be infected, whereas this one is really just like 2 people. But that's the main thing, is that you just keep yourself healthy and keep, you know, kind of just be well and just observe yourself. And if you start feeling tired, or just take a break and rest, and don't let yourself dehydrate at all. Make sure you've got that alkaline water. Alkaline water, I think it works not necessarily because it's alkaline per se into your blood. It's alkaline because it's such small molecules, it goes across your stomach, just like, say, alcohol will, and it'll get into your bloodstream a lot faster than regular water. People always wonder why that works, but I know that when I was diagnosed with Graves' disease, that was the first thing I did, was I got a really good alkaline water machine, and I have always, you know, my headaches went away, all these things that I had from coming to live in Los Angeles. So it is a pretty wonderful, I had a patient, I don't see very many patients these days, basically retired, but I do see some, and a couple of weeks ago, I treated someone in Vancouver, and she was just saying how she got the alkaline water. She and her partner couldn't believe how much better they felt.
Wow.
So, yeah. So I was reminded of that. I mean, we use it all the time, but, you know, I think that sometimes I need to be a bit more adamant with people that they really need to use that. And, if anybody wants a really good alkaline water machine, there are different ones around, and, there are ones that aren't going to cost you $5,000, although that, you know, that's that, what's it called? Whatever it's called. I can't even remember. What is it? Enagic. It is supposed to be the Cadillac of it, a Cadillac, but they're also Korean. The Koreans have a really good one, I think, for $1,000 or $2,000. And it sounds like a lot of money, but I tell you, if you're someone like me that used to get headaches, it just, the headaches are gone, and I never get a headache ever.
So you just put plain tap water in it, and it,
you just hook it up. You just hook it up. This one, I'm sure there's different ways to do it, but you hook it up. I'm not a plumber at all, but it's apparently fairly simple. Just hook it up on your counter, and somebody, get a plumber to come and just hook it up, so it's connected.
Interesting.
Yeah, I just think, and that and the infrared sauna, I really, really encourage you to get infrared sauna. Infrared sauna has just so many, it'll even detoxify plastics.
Well, how do you get an infrared sauna?
You go to Relax Sauna. That is the least expensive. It's a fabric. It's a silver fabric. You can put it in your bedroom if you want. That's where ours is. And we use it every day.
I'm totally confused about what this is. I thought when you said sauna that you had to build this, you know.
No. Oh, okay. So let's just take a couple of minutes to talk about that, because I think everyone needs to have that. It's infrared sauna is a, it's able to penetrate your body in a way that releases these toxins to the surface, and then, you know, comes out your skin and different places. And it's, I think it's like $1,300 with Relax Sauna. Yeah. And okay. If anybody wants to know the phone number, I'll put it on the website soon.
Yeah, you probably just Google it, right, and get there.
Yeah, and just and the other thing, as I was saying, was the trampoline. That gets your lymph system going. And get a massage and just relax, and let's just not worry. Let's just, you know, let's just not freak out, because
now and generally about the flu, just for a second, is that, you know, I'm 70 years old. I can't.
Are you really?
Yeah. And I've had the flu maybe once or twice in my whole life that I can remember.
I think you can thank your mama for that.
I've always been very healthy. My mom did not protect us. She said, go out, eat some germs, it'll make you immune. My mother was not obsessed with cleanliness, and, you know,
awesome.
And we're all healthy as can be.
Right.
Now, what happens, you know, lately is, you know, because I've had jobs and city and stuff, is like everybody's pushing you to get a flu shot. And now everywhere I walk around here, everyone says, have you had your flu shot? Have you had your flu shot? Oh, you haven't. Uh-oh, you better get, you know, like they're trying to scare me. My sister's a nurse. Oh, my God, you're getting older. You have to get a flu shot. You have to get. Well, I've never had the flu. I know lots of people who get the flu shot and have had the flu. And so, you know, that's my little anecdotal study there is like, well, the guy who didn't get the flu shot never gets the flu. And the people who get the flu. So why the hell should I get a flu shot?
Well, I think I mentioned that a lot of times in those five episodes. No, don't get a flu shot. And I never used to be adamant to people. I would always say, well, you got to make up your own mind. Mm-hmm. But the truth is that I'm watching people die from getting a flu shot. I mean, just the other day there was somebody. And I know that people get their backs up with this so much. But the truth is that's why I wanted to explain the innate immune system, the adaptive immune system with the cell-mediated and the humoral. Now, it would have been good if you had had the flu, and it sounds like you've had the flu maybe in your life, that would give you protection because you'll have antibodies. We don't know if it's, you know, which, we didn't talk about really influenza A and the H1N1 as opposed to H3N2 and all that kind of stuff, but basically, once you have that, then you are protected. And that's the same thing with measles or chickenpox. And people don't understand that. That's a much, much better way to protect yourself. And I know it's sort of funny because we're both grew up in Canada. And you can talk about what it was like in, was it Philadelphia, Elliot?
No, closer to Pittsburgh, the other side.
Oh, Pittsburgh. Oh, that was where my mother grew up after Scotland. That I just think in Canada, you know, first of all, the studies that I've seen in Canada show that vitamin D is much more effective than the flu shot. So why is that? Why is it so easy for us to talk about this? Because you talk about it to people here and they get so freaked out as if you are telling people something so counter patriotic. And I like, what?
Sacrilegious.
It's sacrilegious. I know. And it's like, as Canadians, I think we're just taught a much more European approach, just like your mom. Go out and, you know, shuffle around in the dirt. It's going to be good for you. I mean, seriously, it's like, I think it's all, what's the word called? Avarice here. It's all about trying to make a buck.
Yeah.
I really do. And I think it's disgusting. And I know that, you know, I could be targeted and thrown off. You know, I'm not allowed to say certain things on even naturopathic groups about vaccines. I'm like, what? And that's the other thing that I really want to say to people who have, there are a lot of naturopathic physicians who understand that vaccines are not the way, but the schools have been inundated by the CDC protocol. And that's another thing that just breaks my heart, because we do have this system of medicine that is so protective and so beautiful. And it also, you know, dovetails with the environment in terms of plants and the sun and, you know, homeopathy. I mean, we have just even, you know, thoughts. The naturopathic doctors from, you know, in the 1800s, they knew that thoughts were the number one thing. So that's one thing we haven't talked about. We're almost up to an hour with this. So try this next week as well. But thank you so much, Max and Elliot. Love you guys.
You're so welcome. Thanks for all your helpful advice.
Anytime.
A quick question about travel. Do you have any opinions on traveling abroad? Or?
Well, I wouldn't do it right now, personally. I'm a kind of paranoid person, you know, in that way. I mean, like, sure, I'm not going to test. I don't really need to test my luck. I'd rather. I mean, we may cancel a trip to Mexico. And Mexico, I think it'd be fine to go there, no problem. But I just have never, even when I go 3 hours, I don't know how you did it, Elliot. I really don't. I mean, I go 3 hours to Vancouver to see my kids, and I'm like, oh, get me out of this plane. I need air. So I'm not a good person to ask.
Okay.
But okay. I think you guys will be great. And I don't think you have to worry. As I said,
going to Portugal and Spain. And Spain is, I noticed in an article today, Spain is the most healthiest country in the world.
Is that right?
Yep.
No kidding.
Longest, fifth in life expectancy, but number one in healthy.
Wow. That's great. And when are you going?
United States is 35 on that list.
Oh, I know. It's so unhealthy here.
I think Canada was 16.
Huh. But, you know, I think all these people get outside, they exercise in clean air, clean water. I mean, we all talk about climate change, but nobody seems to be talking about we really need clean air, we need clean water, we need clean soil. Like, mm-hmm. what is... We need to get our priorities straight.
For sure.
And we have to really start realizing that, like I said, okay, I just want to repeat this because this is really dear to my heart. The adaptive system, which comes on board if there's a virus that gets through the innate system, you've got the cell mediated and you've got the humoral. If you do not activate the cell mediated with the humoral, it means that all the toxins are being trapped in your body. They're not being eliminated. And that is really what's dangerous. And that's why I'm going to end with a quote. I can find it here. It's quite simple, actually. But it's by... I also wanted to say one quote. Okay, we're going way over time. Shut this off, folks, if this is too long for you. Zhang Xingfeng, a traditional Chinese medicine practitioner at United Family Health, the top hospital for the affluent in Beijing, said that, you know, he's talking about Chinese... herbal medicines, that they're safe, they're effective, and they're easy to get. He says, Western medicine does not have better answers to this virus. The Chinese people have experienced these sorts of plagues many times in our thousands of years of history. If traditional Chinese medicine was not effective, the Chinese people would already be destroyed. I love that quote.
That's interesting.
And then Thomas Cowan, I want to make sure that I say it correctly, is a pediatrician up in Washington State, and he, I don't even think I have it here, but basically what he says is that modern day pediatrics are an assault on the cell mediated system, and this is what the whole problem is. I could find the book, but if I have it right here. Anyways, it's basically that it's just when you don't, and so when you have the humoral, which is vaccines, humoral only is what the vaccine is. I'll just say it again. The humoral only is the vaccines. Without the cell mediated, you are doing a real disservice to people's health. Okay, thank you. And
thank you.
Any questions, let me know. Anybody else have questions, let me know, and I'll let you know.
All right. Thanks, Heather.
Okay. You're welcome.
Bye, Heather. Thank you.
See you soon. Bye.
Bye.
Doc, I knew Denise too. He was the pokeroo on the polka dot tour. And his partner, Chris Conti, he was the lightning person at the Arts Club Theater in Vancouver. Oh, I remember them so well.
Yes, I know. We all do. They're fabulous people. You know, this talk of the danger of the coronavirus is triggering the collective experience we all had with HIV/AIDS. So we have to remember this now, with our family and our friends and our patients. Everyone needs to follow an action plan like I've discussed with Max and Elliot. Let's minimize the possibility of one more person succumbing to something you can't even see except under an electron microscope.